This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. By a vote of 12-6, the Senate Judiciary Committee drew a chasm through Capitol Hill yesterday on immigration. The sweeping immigration bill reported out with a thumbs up from all the committee's Democrats and four of its divided Republicans would legalize the nation's 11 million illegal immigrants and open the nation's borders to 400,000 guest workers a year. Across the Capitol building, a House bill would make illegal immigrants felons and make helping them a crime. The president says be civil, but this is a Grand Canyon standoff over the biggest immigration reforms one way or another in decades. Up next on Point, the great immigration debate takes off. Joining me now to look at yesterday's vote in Washington and at the Capitol Hill debate ahead is Nicole Gowett, who covers immigration for the Los Angeles Times. Nicole, thanks for being with us.
No problem, Tom.
How does this Grand Canyon get bridged, or does it, Nicole? Is this, you know, can it be both ways, always here?
Well, that's a real question, and there are some people who think that we might not get immigration reform in the end because the gulf between the really tough enforcement-only House legislation and what the Senate Judiciary Committee has done is so wide. But there is also going to be a fight in the Senate, and the problems start with the question of what bill the Senate will debate when it begins, because Majority Leader Bill Frist, who introduced his own enforcement-only bill, is now sending out signals that he's not so sure he will allow that to be replaced with what the Judiciary Committee has done.
So in other words, the whole package that Committee Chairman Arlen Specter, Republican, we heard there celebrating getting out of the committee yesterday, might just be sidelined?
Well, the committee members could move on the Senate floor to replace Frist's bill with what they've done. Immigration reform debate was supposed to start on the Senate floor today, and last night Frist said that he would instead do lobbying reform, which was an odd move since he put a lot of pressure on the committee to finish by last night.
Mm-hmm.
And staffers said that it would be hard for Frist to replace the committee bill, replace his own bill with the committee bill. What people think is going on behind the scenes is that Frist is trying to buy a little bit of time to negotiate because he's suffered something of a defeat. People think that he was gambling the committee wouldn't be able to pull the rabbit out of the hat.
And he would thrust his own in there, but they did it, yeah.
They did. And they also passed something that is starkly different from his own bill, and so he might need a little time to negotiate with the chairman and figure out how to bring it to the floor and save face all around.
It must be hard to figure out what to do with all the bullhorns, pro and con, outside and around the country. Nicole, remind us or outline for us what it was that the Senate Judiciary Committee, with Republican putting it over the top, passed yesterday. What are the main planks in this legislation proposed?
Well, the crucial planks are this guest worker program, which allows people to come work here for 6 years, up to $400,000 a year. And over the course of those 6 years, they could start applying for permanent residence status, which is a step towards gaining citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big victory for Senators Kennedy and McCain, who are behind that kind of legislation. The bill also allows the estimated 11 to 12 million undocumented immigrants in the country to move towards legalized status. It would allow them to apply for permanent residency after 5 years, then apply for citizenship. They would have to pay fines and back taxes and learn English and so on.
Would it make those 11 million legal in the meantime, or only once they got into a process towards citizenship?
No, they would have to enter the process towards citizenship. There was another significant thing the bill has done that makes their status until they enter a program like that
mm-hmm.
less iffy is they canceled part of the bill that would have made them criminals just for being in the states without documents.
This is the felony status that the House would put on illegal immigrants.
Exactly. So that has been stripped from the bill, as well as a measure that would have also made it a felony to help any undocumented immigrant. And that part of the bill, in large part, galvanized a lot of the protests that we've been seeing around the country, because the church groups out there, you know, they have a very organized base, and they got people out to let Congress know how unhappy they were with that provision.
The Catholic Church in particular, and very large demonstrations, 500,000 people over the weekend in Los Angeles and in many cities around the country. But then there have been anti-liberalization protests as well, Nicole. This is about as hot an issue as you can get.
It's very emotional. I mean, it touches on a lot of core American myths and beliefs. I mean, the idea that this is a law and order kind of place. It runs head up against people who wave the flag of the immigrant dream, regardless of how the immigrants came. And that makes for some very testy confrontations that I think are just going to get more intense as the weeks go on.
President Bush says we've got to protect our country, uphold our laws, and make our nation proud. Will that be done, do you believe, this year, Nicole? Will there be a compromise worked out here?
You know, at several times during the Judiciary's committee debate over the last couple of weeks, senators have made reference to how no matter what they decide, they're going to make people angry. And this is an election year. There's a lot of discomfort with dealing with something so hot. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see the Senate and the House take this up before November, maybe after. You know, after people have campaigned and won or lost, maybe then when there's a little less to lose, people will feel more comfortable. Mm. But we will see.
But they've sure sent the flares up right now and got a lot of people agitated on both sides right across the country. Nicole, thank you very much for being with us.
That was a pleasure, Tom.
Nicole Gowat is Washington correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. She spoke with me from Washington. I'm joined now by John Judis, senior editor at the New Republic and a visiting fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. His article, Border War, The Fight Over Immigration is a Fight Over Identity, appeared in the January 16th issue of the New Republic. John Judis, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
How does this chasm get bridged or closed, or does it?
I don't think it does get bridged, but I'm not a good prognosticator. I think that the difference between the enforcement approach and the approach favoring some kind of citizenship for illegal immigrants is too great at the present. If you look back to 2004, the last election cycle, President Bush introduced a proposal in January of that year, and it was just it was tabled. I mean, nobody wanted to touch it. And I suspect the same thing is going to happen this time. And what you'll have instead is the issue will be played out in the election.
So what's pushed this front and center, John? If the Republicans are so divided that they can't resolve it, why have they let it come to this enormous, for the moment, impasse?
I'm going to give you a goofy answer to this. I don't think that there is a really good explanation. During the Great Depression, for instance, immigration was an enormous issue, and a lot of Mexicans got deported from California because there were no jobs. We're in a situation now where we have 4% unemployment. That's near full employment, and that's the situation in many of the states where there's an enormous uproar over illegal immigration. I would compare it to the furor over juvenile delinquency in the 1950s, the drug war in the 1980s, the idea that every teenager was on drugs. There is an element of hysteria to it, and it's very characteristic of our political system that we have this this kind of mass focus on an issue that can't be strictly explained on economic or social terms.
We're joined right now from Alexandria, Virginia, by Whit Ayers, a Republican pollster and strategist, president of Ayers McHenry and Associates. Whit Ayers, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
What's the Republican Party got itself over here? Is this solvable, resolvable?
Well, first of all, it's not just Republicans that are concerned about this. A recent survey in the end of February showed that majorities of Republicans, Democrats, and Independents said that illegal immigration is a very serious problem that needs to be addressed. So it's not just a Republican problem, although I guess it becomes one because the Republicans are in control.
They got the White House and both houses in Congress, and they've got the deepest division of the parties.
Well, it divides Americans across the board, not just Republicans. A lot of people are torn over this subject. On the one hand, the idea that immigration is fundamentally good is a basic tenet of our civic religion. The Statue of Liberty is the symbol of the country.
Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, that line.
Precisely. But there's also a widespread consensus that the current immigration system is out of control and not good for anyone. It's not good for people who are here. It's not good for national security. It's not good for the illegal immigrants who are living in the shadows and not getting the benefit of the Social Security system or all the other things that they would benefit from if they were legalized citizens. So there's a general sense that the system is broken, that something needs to be done. That something, of course, is what's being debated right now.
The House stepped up and said, make them felons and criminalize helping them. Democrat Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton said that would literally criminalize the Good Samaritan and probably even Jesus himself.
Well, that's not going to become law. The president has made it very clear that anything that he is willing to sign is going to have to address both the border problem in a fair and tough way, but also some kind of guest worker provision which will allow the businesses that need to get workers to get the workers they need in a legal way. And the president's been pretty clear that he's not going to accept anything that doesn't address both of those elements.
John Judas, how do you read the president here? He put the guest worker program right up there when he didn't really have to, but he did it. What politics, what interests is he listening to there?
Well, this is an issue on which I actually admire the president. It's much different from Iraq. I think that as a result of his experience in Texas, he's sensitive to the fact that illegal immigration is here, and you can't simply kick 12 million people out of the country. I think he also has a political rationale. Bush got over 40% of the Hispanic vote in the last election, and that didn't happen by accident. That happened because Hispanic voters see him as somebody who is sympathetic to them and who listens to them. And I think that if the Republicans follow the contrary course, the Tancredo strategy,
mm-hmm.
I think they're going to find that they'll be in this very similar situation to the Republicans in California, who had a one-time success on Proposition 187 when Pete Wilson used it to get reelected, but then saw an enormous backlash, not just among Hispanics, but among all immigrant groups in the state, including Asians, who saw Republicans as a party of intolerance, and they didn't, you know, the next state election, they didn't win I think they won one state office. So I think that Bush understands the what people in Washington call about the Wilson effect, that there really is a problem here, and that Republicans can't get themselves in the position of alienating Hispanic voters over a decade or two.
Widders, are the Republicans going to dodge that bullet now? On the one hand, you've got polls showing 71% of Americans more likely to vote for a candidate who favors tighter controls on illegal immigration. On the other hand, the president wants to reach out to the immigrant community, but that very outreach is raising all kinds of angry GOP response. Is the GOP going to end up losing the Latino vote here for a generation?
Well, I sure hope not, because Hispanics are the number one swing voter group in the country right now. But I think this is, compared to other major problems we have, Tom, like a war on terror, mm-hmm. and affordable health care, I think this is a solvable problem. I think that there are some certain compromises that can be made that will address the need for workers with the desire to control the borders and the need for a verifiable immigration policy. So I think there are some good ideas out there. It's difficult, but I do think it's possible to come up with some solutions to this problem, probably easier than to some of the other problems.
It's a heck of a gap between making it a felony and opening a way to citizenship. Let's see what our listeners have to say. Kevin's calling from Amherst, Massachusetts. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a lifelong liberal Democrat and come down very strong on the side of enforcement of the immigration laws. If an illegal alien is in the country, he's subject to the laws of the U.S., and the laws should be enforced.
Period. End of story. What about the humanitarian reading here?
I think that that's a red herring. I don't think it's a humanitarian problem at all. You know, it's an economic problem. If a country like Mexico can't support its citizens, then Mexico needs to get its own house in order.
Kevin?
It should be up to us to be a welfare state for the rest of the world.
Kevin, we've got it, and I thank you for your call. Whit Ayers here, you know, Kevin says he's a lifelong Democrat, and yet he says only legal immigration. Paul Krugman in the New York Times, no mean liberal himself, saying net benefits to the U.S. economy from immigration are small, that many of the worst-off native-born Americans are hurt by immigration, especially from Mexico, estimates that U.S. high school dropouts would earn as much as 8% more if it weren't for Mexican immigration. Whit, how's it play on the Republican side? It sounds like Kevin's singing a song that would resonate there, too.
Well, he would. Sounds like we've got a new Republican recruit there.
I don't know. That may be a bridge too far. Maybe not.
That is why we have such pressure to crack down on illegal immigration and construct a workable legal system. Virtually everybody thinks that the current system of handling illegal immigration is wrong, and it's dysfunctional, and it's bad for everybody. And that cuts across ideological lines, as you just heard.
Mm.
That's why we're going to get some kind of action, I certainly hope, out of the Congress to address it.
Maybe, if that huge chasm can somehow be bridged. Whit Ayers, Republican pollster and strategist at Ayers, McHenry & Associates. Whit, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, pleasure to be with you.
I want to welcome into our conversation now from Washington Tamar Jacoby, a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. She writes extensively on immigration and citizenship and has been supportive of a guest worker program. She's author of Reinventing the Melting Pot from her conservative perch there. Tamar, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Los Angeles, Ira Melman, policy analyst at the Federation for American Immigration Reform, which seeks to tighten border security and has praised the House version of the immigration bill. Ira Melman, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Ira, first to you. What do you make of the bill reported out of the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday with the decisive help of Republicans?
Well, I think if your goal is to eradicate the middle class in the United States, the Senate bill is the perfect vehicle for that. It will flood the American labor market to a point where, you know, as you pointed out in Paul Krugman's piece in the New York Times yesterday, he indicated the downward pressure on wages for blue-collar American workers. This will do for the rest of the American labor force what illegal immigration has already done to the blue-collar labor force in the United States. You know, you can change these people from illegal aliens into guest workers or call them anything you want, but you cannot repeal the law of supply and demand. And as long as employers know that there is an unlimited source of labor out there willing to work at whatever price they want to pay, we are never going to see wages rise in this country again, and we're going to lose the middle class and essentially the backbone of this country and what made this country great.
Tamar Jacoby, you're Republican and you're for a guest worker program, so who are you fighting for here, employers or all Americans? How do you read it?
Nothing could be further from the truth than what Ira Melman says. Immigrant workers are good not just for a bunch of greedy employers. They're good for the entire economy. The point about this is the American workforce is increasingly educated and increasingly skilled, and people want to work indoors now and at jobs where they can move up. They don't want to work in the fields. They don't want to work as busboys, and increasingly they don't even want to do low-end construction jobs, good-paying, well-paying, as some of those jobs are. It used to be that about half of American men dropped out of high school and wanted to do unskilled jobs. Now less than 10% do. But we still need that kind of worker, and we're lucky that immigrants are willing to come and do that kind of work because they keep all those businesses here in the U.S. and growing.
Paul Krugman says it's intellectually dishonest to say, as President Bush does, as you just did, that these are jobs that Americans won't do. He says if you didn't have all the immigrants, the wages would be higher, and who knows if Americans might not like to work outside in an open field for decent wages.
Why would it be better for us to pay higher wages for somebody who could work indoors, being like an IT technician, to go out and work on a roof? Why would that be better for the economy? He's going to do what he's most productive at. Why would we want to raise his wages to lure him to a less productive job and then have to raise the wages of everybody else all the way up and down?
Maybe because, I mean, first of all, what's wrong with working on a roof? And secondly, if it means that Americans are going to make less at the bottom of the scale, don't we have to be worried about that?
Of course we have to be worried about that. But the point is, there aren't that many Americans who want to do those jobs anymore. So you're chasing a labor force that doesn't exist, and you're not going to get the most productive work out of the workers we have. It wouldn't be better if you, instead of doing your job, became a messenger boy. You're more productive doing what you do.
Let's hear from the listeners. Carmelis calling from Malden, Massachusetts. Carmelis, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Great show, always.
Thank you, sir. What do you know?
First of all, I want to say that, I mean, those hard-line Republicans, I mean, especially Tom Crito and the other one, they need to understand that when they get old, go to nursing home, who's going to take care of them? Who's going to take care of them? Immigrant. And let's be realistic. I mean, people don't see the problem. Like, they don't want to touch the problem the way it should be. Because I think, you know, some people try to liberalize the Kennedy-McCain bill as an amnesty. That's not what it is. Because think about it, Tom. You have to spend 11 years. 11 years. That's when you're going to have to spend first 6 years and after that another 5 years to earn something.
So, Carmelis, you're saying even this more liberal bill, more open-armed bill from the Senate Judiciary Committee is not liberal or open-armed enough for you?
Exactly. I mean, just to show you that people can say, you know, whatever they want, but they not can blame Bush on this subject, because when you look at it, I mean, in one hand, he had pressure from the group of so-called businessmen, and in the other hand, you had, like, pressure from another group. But I think that they need to be realistic. People who's been here 5 years, we have to identify who's in the country, who's who. Nobody would accept people, you know, come to their country like that. We have to tough on the border. But on the other hand, those who are already here, you know, being contributed to the American economy, what are we going to do with them?
There's the realism argument, and we hear it. Ira Melman, our caller, says, hey, Tom Tancredo, hey, Ira, when you're old and in a nursing home, who do you think is going to roll you over?
Well, you know, there's an indoor job that Tamar was talking about that an American might do instead of, say, working at Walmart. You know, Tamar's making these ridiculous analogies that, you know, people who should be working at Microsoft might be doing your roof. That's not the case. The largest and fastest growing sector of our labor market, unfortunately, is service sector jobs. You have people working in retail, earning very low wages. These are the people who used to do jobs like construction at middle class wages. So these people haven't fallen off the face of the planet. They've simply moved from high paying jobs in construction and other fields to low paying jobs in Walmart and other service industry jobs. And what happens is we wind up subsidizing these people. Let's be very clear here. There is no such thing as cheap labor in the United States. It does not exist.
Subsidized through public programs, but you've got President Bush saying, you know, we've got to look out for the economy. Many employers need these people. And Carmelis, our caller, saying there are 11 million plus here already. What's realism here?
Well, yeah, that's the point. I mean,
they want, they don't need,
the
they want. We all have
there's a supply and a demand, and it's creating a market
equilibrium. I'm still speaking here.
And we can have that market equilibrium be legal, or we can keep it illegal.
Let me get a call here. Jonathan's calling from Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Jonathan. What do you think?
I had just three little points I wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
Is that my grandfather used to do carpentry work, and he was a well-paying, he made a living out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Out of high school, while I was going to college, I tried to do construction work, and they wanted me to speak bilingual. I couldn't speak Spanish to the other construction workers, so I wasn't able to really do that job to help pay for college. So, and isn't it Congress' job to protect our borders? I mean, I've come from Florida originally, and then I moved up here to Georgia. And I was in a driver's license bureau, and an immigrant with fake identification, a fake Social Security card came in, handed the guy that, and he said, this is not real, handed it back and said, go get you a real one. And they didn't arrest him, because that was a felony as far as I know.
But what about the 11 million people plus, Jonathan, who are in the United States doing jobs? What should happen?
Well, they should actually, you know, I would say that there should be a legal way for them to apply, but they need to, a lot of them need to go back. My grandma lives in North Carolina. You know, I work for the school board system here in Savannah, and my kids are having to learn how to speak Spanish. In Florida, they're having to learn to speak Spanish. I want my kids to learn how to speak English first and then Spanish, not so, become, you know.
So you say go back and protect that carpentry wage. John Judas, you can hear how this just tears up the country, tears up the Republican Party.
Right, and I can also hear from the last caller how economic issues dovetail into cultural issues. When I was in Arizona doing this story, I was amazed at how few people complained to me about the economic issues.
Deborah's calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Deborah, you're on the air.
Good morning. Great discussion. My concern is that our whole society will be stronger when we're talking about legal and financial fairness. And when we're talking about penalizing workers who have come here illegally, and I certainly think that they need to eventually reach legal status, what about the fairness of all the employers, the home, the domestic employees, the big corporations that have made billions off of these workers in agriculture and in many other industries?
So you're more concerned about the welfare of the workers, legal or not, than about the sealed border or anything else?
I'm concerned that we're allowing a great many people to be very hypocritical, and that doesn't serve us as a nation, and it doesn't serve us to have people in the shadows. We will reduce. What if all those corporations and those home family people were required to provide a living wage and health insurance? Yes, our costs would go up, but our costs for crime prevention, our costs for legal enforcement on the borders, all sorts of things would go way down.
Yeah, lots of big sentiments in play here. Tamar Jacoby, are you looking primarily at the country's economic health, at American businesses' economic health in employing these workers, or at a humanitarian angle on this story? What's your angle of approach?
I think the reasons to make this change have to do with economics, not just what's good for business, but what's good for the American economy and for American workers, too. These immigrants grow the economic pie for everyone, but immigrants also bring a kind of, if not humanitarian, they bring a kind of vitality and energy and good values to the country. It's the kind of country we want to be open to talent and their kind of energy.
But what is that economic growth? Krugman says here, since 1980, immigration has raised the total income of native-born Americans by no more than a fraction of 1%. That doesn't sound like...
First of all, you know, Krugman, you're citing Krugman like he's the Bible. Krugman's one.
Well, no, he's just looking, it's not his stories, studies. He's looking at a lot of studies.
Yeah.
Have you got...
Yeah, and the point is that the studies haven't figured out a way to measure the economic growth that immigrants make possible. I mean, think about this. An immigrant comes and he works for an American meatpacking plant.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, that allows the American meatpacking plant to stay here rather than move to Brazil, which is something that doesn't even get measured in the
mm-hmm.
type of analysis that Krugman does. But then when that worker comes out of the meatpacking plant, he buys shoes and groceries and a washing machine and gets a plumber to his house and all kinds of things like that. Keeps the business in the town going, not just his business, but all the businesses, and keeps American workers employed there. And then that economic growth helps build up the tax coffers. And the kind of measures that Paul Krugman is doing don't take account of economists call that, the multiplier growth.
The multiplier growth. Ira Melman, how about it? Is this pitting Republican sort of pro-business instincts against what? Nativist Republican instincts here. Is that what we're in the midst of?
I wouldn't call it nativist. I would call it people who are concerned about the welfare of the middle class in the United States. You know, what you're seeing from George Bush and you hear from the Wall Street Journal really is, you know, this sort of hyper-globalism that seems to have taken root, that, you know, we are now all subservient to this global economy rather than having the economy subservient to the people. The economy is there to serve the best interest of the American people. And what this administration is doing is condoning the the massive export of American jobs, and for those jobs that can't be exported, they want to import as many workers as they can to do the jobs that have to remain here. And where does that leave ordinary Americans? You know, if you are somewhere below the rank of a CEO of a major corporation, this doesn't really work for you very well.
Aren't you exaggerating there? I mean, are the leaf-blowing guys really going to take your job if you're just below the CEO of a major corporation?
Well, you know, there is a limit to the number of leaf-blowing guys that we really need in this country. The fact of the matter is that the majority of illegal immigrants are working in jobs that until fairly recently used to be done by Americans, and I think construction is the perfect example. You know, there are many jobs in this country that Americans would gladly do if it paid a decent living wage. And just to get back to what the caller said a few moments ago, we need to go after the employers. That's where the focus ought to be. And I think everybody who has looked at this issue has understood that as long as employers know they can get away with undercutting American workers, hiring illegal aliens with impunity, they are going to keep doing it. And you know, we create these self-fulfilling prophecies.
But those employers, those are American businesses. I mean, they are, you know, part of the economy here, as Tamar Jacoby says.
Well, you know, there are a lot of things that companies could do that would help their bottom line, but as a society, we say there are other obligations. You know, we make them observe environmental laws, even though it would probably be cheaper to simply belch, you know, smoke out into the environment.
Yeah, we hear it. Let me turn to Camden, South Carolina, and Timothy. Hi, Timothy, you're on the air.
Yes, I think this is completely ridiculous. What that lady said a little while ago about the idea that if you are educated enough to be a doctor, then you should be a doctor instead of putting roofs on a house is ludicrous. I'm American. I do what I want to do. If I want to go out and get an education to be a doctor or a lawyer, and then I decide I don't like doing that, but I enjoy driving trucks and want to go do that, she's saying I should not be able to do that. That's crazy.
But George Bush says we need a guest worker program. What do you say to the president?
We don't need a guest worker program. All these jobs was covered by Americans for a long time without the Mexicans being here or anybody else being here. If you pay a man, it don't matter how much you pay him. If there's no other choice and he can't find a job nowhere else, by George, he's going to go to work. He's going to have to support his family.
Timothy, we hear it. Tamar Jacoby, you hear Timothy saying, look, if I want to be a roofer, if I want to be a carpenter, don't tell me I can't. I'm an American. This is my country, my economy.
Of course, he can do whatever he wants. I'm not saying people have to do anything.
Well, but you're acknowledging that the wages may be lower there because of immigrants.
No, the point is, people keep talking about, you know, it used to be like this. It used to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10 years ago, people did this. When I was a young man, it was like this. Our economy and the world is changing. Don't we want to take advantage of that and get to a place where people who used to work in the fields but now go to college can pursue what they want to do? This isn't about a bunch of employers. This is about what's good for all Americans and growing the economy for all Americans.
Is there a number that would be too much?
Yeah. The point of the reform is that that's already happening.
Right.
We already have that kind of market, that kind of international labor market, and that kind of actually market equilibrium, and it is working out for Americans. In the past 20 years, we've had more immigrants than we've ever had, and we've had an incredible boom in our economy.
Would you cap it here somehow? We've got 11 million now. What if it went to 20 million? Would that be fine by you as well?
It is at a market equilibrium. What this is going to do is not bring more people in. It's going to create. It's going to allow what's happening now illegally to happen in a lawful, dignified manner.
Mm-hmm.
The system now helps nobody except the smugglers. It's not good for the immigrants. It's the business. Most businesses are not at the bottom paying less than minimum wage. They're paying $10, $15, $20 an hour, the same that they would be paying Americans. They just have to rely on an unstable illegal workforce and be scared that the law is going to come down on them all the time.
Let me get a call from Framingham, Massachusetts, if I may. Jennifer's on the line. Hi, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks. Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah. What do you think?
The point that I wanted to make is I feel like the unemployed American is hiding behind this issue of immigration. My husband runs a business where all of his staff, maybe 90% of his staff, are illegal immigrants. Now, they know they're illegal. They don't have any other choice. They pay the same wages to their Brazilian workers that they do to the American workers, the exact same wages. They promote the Brazilian workers as much as they promote the American workers.
But would your husband have to pay more if the illegal immigrants weren't there? Would those be more attractive jobs for other Americans?
Absolutely not. And the reason I say that is because every American that he hires has stays there a much shorter time than his Brazilian employees. They seem to have a better work ethic. They seem to value being in this country more.
But don't they have fewer options? They're illegal. They can't just go swanning around everywhere looking for new jobs. Isn't that kind of the part of the dynamic there?
But see, now you say that. However, think about where we're located here. I mean, we're in a very affluent part of the country, and there are a lot of jobs available. These guys that work for my husband are making $12, $15 an hour. You know, the Brazilians that clean my house, I'm paying them $100 a week.
But it's not a very popular political view to say to Americans, pull your socks up, work harder, have a better work ethic. But Jennifer, we hear that perspective from your husband's business. John Judas, this just looks like a minefield for everybody here, but for the GOP in particular. Do you think they're going to get somewhere with this?
I think that they'll get somewhere in some places, but not in others, and that nationally the repercussions will be very negative. Obviously, there are going to be elections where people will be able to benefit from this issue. I would look very closely at this congressional race around Tucson. In the district where Jim Colby used to represent. And the guy who's running there, Randy Schiltz, ran against Colby in the primary 2 years ago and got 43%, and he's an anti-immigrant guy.
But you've got John McCain, Arizona senator, who's pushing hard for the guest worker program.
Yeah,
exactly. And then you have Kyle, who's sort of on the other side, and that's what I say. I think that Arizona is a very good example. I think what you're going to see there is that in the wake of Proposition 198, that the Latino voters are going to get energized, and that it's probably going to push that state a little bit more toward being a swing state than a solid Republican state.
Tamar Jacoby, do you see the GOP cracking over this or moving to some kind of new equilibrium?
Of course there's going to be a bitter debate within the party, but no election in the past few decades has turned on immigration.
Ira Milman, how about it? Is this political poison for the GOP? Can it somehow grow out through this?
Oh, absolutely, it's political poison. You know, unless they do something to control the influx of immigrants, they are going to get rolled in the future.
We're out of time. We're out of time, but we see the chasm there, and we're very grateful to all of you for helping us look into it. Ira Milman at the Federation for American Immigration Reform in L.A. Thanks for being with us, Ira.
Thank you.
Tamar Jacoby at the Manhattan Institute. Tamar, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And John Judas, senior editor at The New Republic. John, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.